This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 24th of November, 2021. Yesterday, the sell-off in U.S. equities extending fairly aggressively. And after that very ugly session the prior day where we saw that climax reversal we discussed in yesterday's podcast, the bounce coming, I think no coincidence here, and in the wake of a U.S. 70-year Treasury auction, which saw bidding metrics quite strong, the strongest in some time for that particular maturity. And that yield, after the yields had surged to new highs, at least for that benchmark, new highs for the cycle, they retreated quite sharply. And that, I think, engineering as well, the bounce, especially in these interest rate sensitive stocks. So you can see on slide two, that bounce coming in somewhat of a hammer. I think we're still in the shadow very much so at these current levels, just above 16,300 of that big sell-off bar. So I would say we're technically far from being in the clear just yet. And you can see our equity theme baskets, how they shaped up in yesterday's trade. Peter, we've talked a lot about this interest rate sensitivity. You've got some interesting ways of looking at this and sort of proving the point in a chart that you've been circulating. So walk us through that.
So that's on slide three. It's slide to the left. So what we did, you could extend the analysis, of course, but we looked at all the daily data points we have this year. So that's 200. So yesterday's 231 data points. So we calculate the change in percentage points in the US 10-year yield. So that's what you see on the x-axis. We divide it into 10 buckets, so deciles. So the first bucket to the left is the decile, the 10% most days where the 10% days where the US 10-year yield goes up by the most. So you can see that's from 5 basis points to 14 basis points in a single day. And then we have looked at the three different markets, so NASDAQ 100, S&P 500, and Stock 600, and we calculate their log returns on a daily basis, and we subtract the MSCI World. So basically, what are the daily excess returns of these markets? And then we average those for these periods on the deciles. And what you see here is that if you take the first decile to the left, you have NASDAQ down considerably, significantly, when you have big up days in the US interest rates, and you have a big up days for Stock 600 on those days on average. So there's a 100 basis point spread right there. And then if you, in the middle of this chart, it's just noise, it's just random noise. And then if you go to the 10th decile, which is the days where you see the biggest declines in the US 10-year, you see the opposite pattern between the NASDAQ 100 and Stock 600. So I think this is probably the most clear evidence I've seen that this is how the interest rate sensitivity works, right? So it's a tail risk thing, phenomena. And if you have a pure growth portfolio, this is what you're exposed to. If you have big days with the interest rates going up, and if we soon get a breakout in the 10-year, you should have a pretty bad day. So this goes to say that if you want to avoid these very, very ugly tail risk scenarios, you need to balance, basically reduce your duration and balance it with something that is a little bit more of value stocks.
Reduce your duration. So those, and there are equities, of course, that are super sensitive to these longer term interest rate changes. And one of those, as we talked about in the morning meeting, apparently I didn't know this until then, was the Copenhagen index, which really saw an ugly day yesterday. And you've got that chart there on slide three as well.
Yeah, we have the daily chart going back from April and the 5-year in the appendix. But as you can see, it's this is the 25 largest companies in the C25. Very, very ugly day. Gap down on the morning, and it just kept falling. As I said on our internal call, John, are the Dutch market, the Danish market, the Swiss market, and the US, and then India. But that's a little bit of a side story because it's in the emerging markets. But those four developed equity markets are the ones with the highest equity duration. And in Denmark, we have a lot of companies in this index that are very richly valued. Novo Nordisk, Coloplast, etc. Some of these healthcare companies where the value is really based on cash flow expectations fine to the future. John, before we move on, I don't have a slide on this, but we have to also mention the positive session we're seeing in China. Chinese equities are still wobbling back and forth, so day by day, but today was clearly a little bit more positive because we got good earnings from Xiaomi, Kuaishou Technology, which is in social media. So that, I think that was the biggest surprise given the technology crackdown and what we're seeing from other Chinese players. And then XPeng, which is this pure battery-driven electric vehicle manufacturer out of China, they rose in Q3 to now they have basically overtaken NIO in terms of delivery numbers. So things are really heating up in this EV space. And Xiaomi, talking about electric vehicles, announced that they are now moving in and expecting to do mass production in 2024. So a lot of companies are moving into electric vehicles. As I said, I think it will be a graveyard, but let's see what the future brings.
So Xiaomi to meet Apple in the electric vehicle graveyard.
That's a good one.
we'll see. Phone makers making cars, you can't make it up. But moving along swiftly, before I get over to you, Olu, we have some very interesting oil developments. But I want just highlighting the last point on these yields, and that is in the FX space where we're seeing that extreme sensitivity in dollar yen. And just for comparative purposes, put on slide 4 that U.S. 7-year treasury yield, where we saw the new highs for the cycle yesterday being sort of brushed back a bit lower in late trading. And we see likewise very similar action locally there in dollar yen, as you can see on the right there for the last couple of months. Just note, I put the two red circles just for the perspective that that's the same time frame. That was where the prior big peak in the U.S. longer yields was, also for the 10-year out in the very end of March, not coincidentally, probably the end of the Japanese financial year. The Japanese are the biggest foreign buyers of U.S. treasuries. But that was much lower, even though the yields are at similar levels now. The dollar yen level is not similar at all. And part of that is inflation story. And otherwise, that's helped drive yen exceptionally weak for the cycle. But you can see we're back more towards 111 on dollar yen at the prior big highs in the longer yields in the U.S. All right, let's get over to you, Ole, because we saw there was a bit of I was doing a bit of wisecracking on Twitter with this strategic petroleum reserve release announcement of 18 million barrels in the U.S. yesterday that Biden announced. And I said, wow, that's almost a single day of U.S. oil consumption. Apparently, the market not very impressed when we look at the price action. So take us through what's going on. If you think this effect is going to just fade immediately, or if there's any durable impact.
Well, as I put here on slide 7, John, basically the release underwhelmed the market. Several reasons for that. First of all, we have to consider that the market had already dropped around 10% since that rhetoric started to be heard from the U.S. administration about wanting to do something to curb prices. And once the release was announced, it basically was not really living up to expectations. Just a few details. The 50 million barrels that's going to be released by the U.S., 18 of those, as you mentioned, is just speeding up a already planned increase, which is part of a increase seen this year to fund some of the U.S. state budget. So that's not new barrels. The additional 32 barrels are going to be swapped to or lent out to refineries only to be delivered at a later date. So basically, it's over time, it's a net zero impact on the market. And we have to consider that if the market experienced tightness into 23 and 24 due to low capex, that's potentially could be a time where some of these barrels need to be returned or bought in the market and returned to the to strategic reserves. So not a great impact on that. Also remember, just on the inserts there, you can see refinery demand in the U.S. is already pretty close to the seasonal average. That basically means how much more oil do they actually need? That basically means that some of those releases could go to exports, which I'm sure will raise a few eyebrows among the Democrats. In addition, the addition coming from other countries around the world, again, also not really something that will move the needle. On top of that, the risk is now that OPEC may conclude that with these releases, they don't really need to add any extra additional barrels over the coming months, or at least reduce the number of barrels. And if they do that, then we are not really gotten any further in terms of trying to bring down prices. So net, the market is not impressed, and really what is required is long-term stability in terms of supply being able to meet demand, and I think that uncertainty has most certainly not gone away by this. Just note that we got the inventory report out late to date. The API reported a 2.3 million barrel increase in crude stocks yesterday, also an increase in Cushing. And if these are confirmed this afternoon, that potentially could have a small negative impact on the market.
All right. And then we have over in Europe, we're still not going anywhere with these natural gas prices, which remain elevated, actually ticked up again today, we're still at multiples of the prior sort of range. What is there any sign anything's going to ease in this
Nope,
sector?
unfortunately not, because the biggest source of additional demand or supply could come from either LNG or come from Russia. If you look at the LNG, first of all, the on slide nine, the bottom right chart, you can see the price difference between Japan, Korea, that's LNG to Asia, and the Dutch TTF, which is the European benchmark. Right now, we've got quite an elevated gap between those two benchmarks, and that basically means LNG is most likely to flow to Asia instead of Europe. And that's obviously a worry. At the same time, the expected pickup in Russian supply is simply not happening. You can see that on the daily flows. There has actually been a small reduction over the past couple of days, and inventories, Gazprom controlled inventories in Europe is still way below where they should be for this time of year. So all in all, what does this lead to? Well, surging power prices once again. We've got day-to-day record power prices across Europe. We got carbon emission contracts moving to a new record because power plants, they basically want to burn more coal because it's cheaper, it's the profitability is higher, and that's just leaving us in the, in a very precarious situation. Not to mention that we are apparently going to see much lower temperatures next week, and at the same time, wind generation is on the weak side as well.
Okay, and yeah, just one note on the energy front. It's just I can't believe just watching the U.S. president and Senator Warren whining about profiteering on gasoline prices. Are we going to go back to the 1970 policy of price freezes at some point? There was that was what caused the worst of the disaster back then because people were not allowed to make a profit on gas, and then suddenly had gas lines all over the country. So it's very interesting, also for just from a sentiment and policy angle, what happens to that end price for gasoline. And your chart there on the showing the gasoline supplies is, I think, really interesting as we head into what should be a build season
And John,
in the coming weeks.
Exactly. And if I may just add just a small side, a small story, because if then the another tool that they have been discussing is basically an outright ban on US crude oil export. That would just create a heck of a lot of problems because US refineries, they are geared towards a heavier crude than what they is produced domestically in the US. So if they ban exports of their light sweet, then that would not solve anything, but because they still need to import crude oil from abroad, and if they are barred from doing that, then the system just basically could break down. Also remember that refinery or gasoline prices, they're not based on WTI, they're based on Brent, and if there's a lower supplies coming into the global market from the US, that could send gas Brent prices higher, and with that also gasoline prices. So an export ban would not solve anything.
Very interesting and key perspective there. All right, let's wind back to a couple of FX stories I want to cover here. The most important being in New Zealand overnight, where we had a pivotal, not pivotal, but a net, the latest in the series of rate hikes that the markets anticipating from the RBN said. And it did hike 25 basis points. The majority were expecting that. So automatically, you're going to expect a knee jerk because those expecting 50 basis points did get what they wanted. But it was in the guidance that we saw more of a surprise. And I think a significant tap on the brakes, if you will, relative to expectations. So the RBNZ said clearly in its guidance and its rather lengthy policy statement indicating it's still going to continue to hike rates. But there's notes of caution here about the amount that the market has essentially tightened already. And they want to see, judging from what I'm seeing in the rhetoric and towards the end, I pulled out sort of the money quote, if you will, on slide five, and you can see it there, that they're noting that there's some uncertainty on how these planned rate increases and those in the bag already, together with monetary conditions that have already tightened and some macroprudential measures against the housing speculation that was unleashed by the pandemic response. It's clear they want to continue to hike rates at a steady pace and then wait and see in coming months. So there's no urgency. They're certainly not meeting the expectations that were very stretched by the market. We saw the two-year New Zealand rate actually pulling back 14 basis points. And I show you the Australian versus the New Zealand two-year yield spread there on slide five. And you can see that the very big jump there. I think we're seeing the mean reversion. I suspected previous to this that we might get another extension to new lows in the Aussie Kiwi. But I think with this shift in guidance, we've kind of put a stopper to the spread ability for that spread to widen further in New Zealand's favor. So unless something goes drastically wrong in Australia, I would expect that the Aussie Kiwi chart has bottomed now. We're also seeing, Peter mentioned some positivity coming out of China. There's thoughts that some stimulus is on the way. We're seeing iron ore prices recovering sharply as there's anticipation of increased steel output. So I think the tilt is changing and more in favor of the Aussie relative to where Kiwi expectations were. Let's see if we can jump all the way back towards 106. That'll be the first sign that we're getting a better extension off the lows and effectively a double bottom there in Aussie Kiwi. And then finally on FX, have a look at slide 6, the latest trend readings. Nothing really new in development terms, except for the Kiwi losing further momentum and or actually sort of gaining some downside momentum, if you will. But look at Euro Stoxx. So I've emphasized how the darkening EU outlook has really affects those peripheral currencies even more so. I was asking whether the Swedish krona was getting unfairly weak on some of this, but as the outlook remains miserable, the answer is apparently not. So we fully mean reverted back into the range there. And that has really wiped out what was a downward trend for quite some time as we've sliced well back above the 10 level in Euro Stoxx. Euronaki in a somewhat similar situation, though there is a hope for Norwegian krona that the oil prices could relatively support there. We do have a Riksbank meeting tomorrow from Sweden that could be interesting for signals and how they see the lay of the land in terms of inflation. All right, Peter, what do you have on schedule for today? The earnings calendar seems to be drying up rapidly.
Yeah, it is drying up rapidly. As you can see, there's only Deere reporting today, which is the very, very exciting company that produces machinery equipment for the agricultural sector. No, on a serious note, Deere is a fantastic company. There's nothing there, as you can see as well on slide 10 of the financials. It's right now they are. Generating around 25% operating income margins. It's pretty impressive. So they're enjoying good times and they have bounced back pretty significantly. It will be the last quarter with good growth rates. So as you can see on the insert there, it's 8% revenue growth expected, delivering $10.5 billion in sales for their last fiscal quarter for their fiscal year 2021. They're not following the calendar year. Their fourth quarter ended in October, but jokes aside on there, we usually talk to clients about technology stocks and not machinery equipment makers for the agricultural industry. But I think it is a fun one or an interesting one to watch because of the latest move in food prices and in general the commodity space, as Ole has been highlighting so well over the past year, and I think But everything that goes on also with the fertilizer prices and it could be worth having a look at what management is saying in terms of the outlook for the agriculture sector. So we'll have a look at that.
And as well, I don't know if you want to highlight anything on gold, but to me, that chart just looks so ugly with this latest sell-off, a real devastating blow to the bullish case that was in place on the big rise above 1850 as we've slid back below the 1800 area. It'll take quite some heavy lifting to get that chart back focused on the upside.
Absolutely. And we basically need to break back above 1818. That's the first retracement level of this recent weakness for that to change. But the only sign of positive, if you should draw anything positive out of it, is the two bottom charts, which basically shows the open interest and the volume over the past couple of days. Open interest has dropped quite a bit. This number is not including yesterday's data, which will be released a bit later. But you can see volume these past 2 days has been twice the average seen for the past 3 months. That could indicate that some of this speculative froth that had been built up before, and especially after the CPI release, has now been taken out, and thereby potentially removed a key source of selling that has been the main reason for what I would say has been an oversized reaction to the events earlier this week.
All right, and that leaves us with the calendar for today and the rest of the week. So with the U.S. Out on holiday tomorrow and more or less closed on Friday, we have all the data crammed into today, which is the last day, of course, before that long holiday weekend. PCE inflation is the highlight there. Both of those expected to notch new highs for the cycle and since basically the early 1990s. Of course, significant upside beats might get a bit of extra attention there. And then later we have the U.S. FOMC minutes at the normal time, as we're looking forward to the degree to which the debate around the pace of tightening is heating up. That December meeting from the FOMC is going to be quite interesting for whether they double the pace of the tapering of asset purchase purchases. And you see some other bits and pieces from the U.S., including the final version of that Michigan sentiment survey, which is notable in having declined to below, well below the pandemic lows, pandemic outbreak lows from last year. A bit of a mismatch with the Conference Board consumer confidence indicator, directional sympathy, but very, very different levels. So interesting to see if that gap closes. It could be expressing some widespread discontent and poor sentiment on the state of inflation out there. So we'll see how that shapes up. All right, that's a wrap for today. I will be digging into some Thanksgiving turkey tomorrow. We'll be off the show, but I am trying to record a special edition podcast this evening with a special guest. So stay tuned for that. And the rest of the crew will be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.